your name?
We're going to call to order the meeting for the Senate Committee on Education. Today is April 7th, 2015, and we have a few little housekeeping things we're going to do right off the bat. The first one, we're going to open a work session to introduce a committee bill, so we'll do that first. And this is LC 3948, and we are introducing it as a committee bill. And as everybody knows, and let the public know, introducing it as a committee bill does not mean that you are in favor of it or against it. It only means that we're introducing it so that it can be assigned to a committee to be worked later on in the committee. So, any questions?
Mr. Chair, I'd just say that this one we do every session because we have to, because we never quite reach the funding level of QEM.
That's where it's at. So, is there any other discussion? Seeing none, is there any opposition to the introduction of LC 3948?
Do you want me to make a motion?
I guess we will.
Chair Oblin, I move that LC 3948, dated March 10th, 2015, be introduced as a committee bill.
I was trying to get done before Bart Sugar got in here. Okay. But Senator Knott moves that LC 3948, dated March 10th, 2015, be introduced as a committee bill. Any further discussion? We've already had a little bit of one.
I'm not saying anything.
Is there any opposition to said LC 3948? Seeing none, it is introduced as a committee bill. We have two others, so we'll close the work session and we'll open a work session on SR3. And Senator Cano.
Chair Roblin, I move Senate Resolution 3 to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the Committee on Rules.
So Senator Knope moves Senate Resolution 3 to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that it be referred to the Committee on Rules. For part of the discussion, I have been talking with the person who put this bill out, Senator Hensel. He wants to keep it alive as he continues to try to get a hold of people to see that they could actually be here on the date. And rules will keep it in play. So, any other discussion? Seeing none, is there any opposition to the motion? Seeing none, the motion passes. And we don't have to do anything because it's referred to the other committee.
We've got to close the work session.
We will close that work session and open a new work session on Senate Bill SR4. Senator Knope.
Chair Oblin, I move Senate Resolution 4 to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the Committee on Rules.
Senator Knope moves Senate Resolution 4 to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that it be referred to the Committee on Rules. Is there any discussion? And I guess I would say the same thing so people understand what these are. These are two memorials or resolutions honoring Heisman winner Marcus Mariota and Heisman winner Terry Baker at a future date. So that's why we're waiting for people, and people didn't know what that was about. Yes.
Mr. Chair, because this is our one opportunity, I would also point out that Terry Baker was also a member of the Oregon State basketball team that went to the Final Four. So that's, he was a pretty amazing individual.
Yes, he was. Any further discussion? Any opposition? Seeing none, it passes, and we'll send that on to rules.
One more thing on that, because Oregon State played in the Liberty Bowl that year, and the score was 7-0, and it was a Terry Baker 99-yard run that was the one scoring the game.
That's right. There are some people who know their Oregon State football history. It was just a couple years ago, though.
It was, yes.
So with that, we will close that work session if I haven't already done it, and I will open a public hearing on Senate Bill 588. This bill, do we have just me? Okay, I'll do it from here. And if there's anybody else that would like to, we have anybody that signed up to? Oh, we do. Okay, good. So I'll call Lori Satinspiel. If she's outside, she can get. Do you want to check and see if Lori's out there? Tell her it's about Senate Bill 588. Senate Bill 588, for people who don't understand, I have one of these districts. There are a few of them around the state where the school district was very small, and they decided to make themselves a charter district. So they are a full charter district. Come on in. They are a full charter district. And in talking with my school district, they didn't understand why, as a school district, they had to file one set of forms, and then as a charter school, they had to send out the same kind of forms and to get audited in both places, even though it's exactly the same total organization. So what this bill does is eliminates that and says they just have to do it once. So,
Mr. Chair, I point out that I have three of those in my district.
So that's what it's about. Yes.
Mr. Chair,
sorry about
that. For the Oregon school boards. I got to get my polls here. I was running from down the hall. Senate Bill 588 is our bill to clarify in statute. We thought we fixed it in 13 with who would only have to file one audit. Currently, auditors, and I thought there was going to be a couple here today to help me explain it. But currently, a school district files an audit, charter school file an audit. Well, we have one entity now, and we thought we fixed how those two operate together in order to have one audit. Auditors in the field still, including Secretary of State, said we still need to fix that because it's the statute still requires two audits in some cases. So we put some language out. The auditors have looked at it, said this clarifies it, and they're supposed to be here today to help me with that. It's a pretty simple bill. I hope it's just a fixed bill.
So any questions of our... Yes?
I may not be able to explain anything more than that, other than there were certain circumstances Department of Ed said that we needed to have in statute.
So. Thank you very much. And we'll close our public hearing on Senate Bill 588. And do people need to have an order? Are we ready to go on this bill?
I'm ready.
Okay. So I will open a work session on Senate Bill 588. Senator Knope.
Chair Roblin, I move Senate Bill 588 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Knope moves Senate Bill 588 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion?
I'd just say that Lori didn't really need any auditors. She just covered it really well all by herself. So,
is there any other discussion? Seeing none. Is there any opposition? Seeing none. The bill passes. Do you want to carry? You want me to? I will. I'll carry this. So you have three. I only have one. So I just, but I will take care of this.
I'll have questions for the carrier.
Okay, that's fair enough. I appreciate that. We'll close our work session on Senate Bill 588. And we will open a public hearing on...
Did we do those already?
Yep.
Yeah, we can do them both.
We don't mess around.
We'll open a public hearings on Senate Bill 819 and on Senate Bill 820, so we can take testimony from either or both, so you don't have to come up twice like we just did with the accountants at the other charter school program. So with that, we'll have a short explanation by our administrator and...
Chair Roblin, members of the committee, Senate Bill 819 modifies the percentage of amounts school districts must pay from the state school fund to public charter schools that are not virtual public charter schools. Senate Bill 820 allows public charter schools to give priority to students who are from historically underserved student groups.
And with that, we'll call up Karin Hikas, Tara O'Neill, and Zalika Gardner. Come on up. Just so people know, generally speaking, when we have our first panel that gets up, we'll give them a little bit more time because they're going to explain the bill and do a little bit more. After that, we will put people on a two-minute timer because there's a lot of people, it looks like, that may want to speak, and I want to make sure that we get through as many as we possibly can. And in so that being said, also, we look at the list and where are they from. And if they're over 100 miles away, we try to grant that person the opportunity before others. So just before we get started. And with that, Karin.
Thank you, Chair Roblin, members of the committee. I'm Karin Hikas, and I'm with Kairos PDX and a dozen or so, 15 to 20 good charter schools in this state, representing them as well. And I'm here to just introduce my colleagues primarily. This is Zalika Gardner. She is the Director of Education at Kairos PDX, which is a new nonprofit in North Portland that exists to close the racial achievement gap. And further to my left is Tara O'Neill, who is the Executive Director of the Emerson Charter School in Portland. And we are going to talk with you about Senate Bills 819 and 820 and the data, some of what's going on in the field, and the rationale, the basis for the bills.
Chair Roblin, members of the committee, my name is Tara O'Neill, and I'm the director of the Emerson School, public charter school in Portland, Oregon. Thank you for the opportunity to testify before you today. The Emerson School is a K-5 charter school located in downtown Portland. We're in our 12th year of operation and have received the highest rating on the Oregon Report Card every year we've been rated. Our students use the outside downtown community as an extension of their classrooms for their project-based studies and incorporate service learning in the community with each project. We pay retail rental rates for our downtown Portland location, and parents have to pay to park on city streets to pick up and drop off students at our public school. I've been the director of this charter school for 12 years. We're here today to talk about funding equity and enrollment equity for Oregon's public charter school students and ask for your support for Senate Bills 819 and 820. Charter schools are an integral part of the web of support for our public school students. We're part of the same public education system, working with the same students with the same achievement standards as our host district schools. Yet, as a recent Eco Northwest study from the Chalkboard Project found, we're doing this with an average of 58% of the funding of our district counterparts. To explain where the funding disparity comes from, I reference the Eco Northwest study of charter school funding released in March of this year. The study was commissioned by the Chalkboard Project to shed light on the question of how charter school funding compares with that of their district counterparts. Data for the study was taken from 2012-2013 Oregon Department of Education reports. Their study revealed a significant funding deficit for charter school students when compared with students attending district-run schools. This slide is taken directly from the report and shows overall student funding for charter schools is just over half that of district-run schools. Where does that funding go? Looking at this funding disparity, we see that there are a number of streams of revenue that feed into a district-run school, state, federal, local, grants, and others. Of those streams, just one, the state school fund grant, is required to be passed on to the charter schools. As those funds are passed through the district, a portion is retained there, 20% for charter students in grades K-8, and 5% for charter students in grades 9 through 12. So charter school students receive 80% or 95% of one funding stream only. With very few exceptions, the other funding streams feed district schools only and are not passed through to the charter school students. Those school districts have the option of passing on additional funds to charter schools. Very few do, and there's little incentive for them to do so. The result of this, according to the Eco Northwest study, is that charter school students are receiving 42% less, on average, about $5,000 less funding per student per year than their district school counterparts. To put numbers on it from charter schools in my district, in 2013-14, the state spent about $10,250 per student in public funding, as reported in the annual report card. K through 8 charter schools in my district only received an average of $5,200 per student, and high schools an average of $6,185 per student. That's just over 50% and 60% respectively of the average state per pupil spending. What Senate Bill 819 would do is ensure 95% of all state and local funding, except facilities and special ed funding, would pass through to charter school students, leaving a 5% administrative fee in the sponsoring districts. What Senate Bill 819 would do for charter school students is provide equity of opportunity. Opportunity for classroom supplies and materials, instructional supports, retention of qualified staff, safe and clean facilities, access to transportation, and more. This would require no new funding from the legislature and would shift less than 1%, about 0.7% of the funding from the district-run schools to the charter school students. In my district, there are 9 district-sponsored and 2 state-sponsored charter schools. The district supports a charter school's office with 2 dedicated staff who serve to oversee, evaluate, and help navigate district resources for its charter schools. It's an effective model and fosters communication between the district and its charter schools. From the 11 charter schools, the district will retain over $2.1 million in state school funding this year. If left with a flat 5% administrative fee, that amount would be a little over $750,000. That's nearly my school's entire operating budget for the year, including 10 staff, and would support the district's ability to maintain the charter school's office for oversight and evaluation. For all the difference it would make to the charter school students, Senate Bill 819 would still not bring them up to the funding status of their district peers, but it would be a meaningful step in the right direction in paring down the $5,000 per student funding disparity for our charter school students. Senate Bill 819 would apply to students attending independent charter schools only. It would not include virtual charter schools or charter districts, which are already fully funded. In total, this would be a step toward funding equity for about 16,000 public school students in Oregon. While none of Oregon's students may have the full funding the quality education model recommends, they should all have access to the same base rate of funding, no matter which public school they attend. Our charter school students are as valuable, as precious, and as worthy of our public investment as students in district-run schools. It's time to end the inequity. We urge your support for Senate Bill 819. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. Representative Kahn, we know that you guys are really busy, and thanks for coming, and we thought we'd let you have a chance to say a few words. Any questions before we excuse you to go if you need to?
Okay. Thank you, Chair Roblin and committee members. Chair, did you open up both?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you. Chair Roblin and committee, thank you, and I appreciate you holding this hearing. I think it's very important. For the record, I'm State Representative Betty Comp, representing House District 22, Woodburn, Jervis, and North Salem. I cannot articulate any better than what the presenter just did that shared with Senate Bill 819. I personally am a little shocked at the disparity and the lack of inequity. And the comment that I would make on Senate Bill 819, last year after our short session, I was invited to a high school, charter school in Northwest Portland. And it kind of took me home to, because I always loved being in a high school. But there were teachers, there were students, and they were all actively learning. And what was really amazing was they had a very set of protocols on behavior, expectations for homework, and how you act in the classroom. And just as I was leaving, the director shared with me that the fact was that that charter school was closing. I said, well, where will these students go? And she looked me straight in the eye and she said, on the street. They did not have the appropriate funding. All it was the funding. They had incredible teachers that done awesome staff development. And it broke my heart to see these students that this last fall, they didn't have a school to go to. They are definitely students that needed that smaller environment, needed that more one-on-one attention, and they couldn't get it. Senate Bill 820, very briefly, is, again, looking at schools have more of these students and they can meet the needs, and so it's about having a weighted lottery so that students that come in poverty or have other different struggles, that they do a lottery and put all their names in the hat and pull them out, and particularly as students complete their programs, because then they can just do the same thing, so there's a good pathway for students in and out of these charter schools, because they really do individual education plans for each one of these students, and it's pretty amazing when you, well, I was there a whole day, I couldn't leave, I just, you know, it's just too important. And most people think charter schools are particularly for elementary, and it's the whole continuum, and I just feel very firmly that with your help, if you have any issues with these bills, that you can help them move in the direction that we'd love to see them. And I encourage your support, your thought, your backgrounds on how to make this happen. So I thank you, and I know you have other testimony, and yes, and I need to go to another budget committee
meeting. Right now we'll just do questions of Representative Comp, and then if there, we'll come back to the whole group when we have other questions. So
thank you. I had two questions about Senate Bill 820, which was before the House Ed Committee in another forum last session when we served on it together. And there were so one, in this iteration of the bill, I'm wondering why students with disabilities aren't included in the historically underserved, and whether or not that weighting would then make it harder for students with disabilities to be admitted than others, and if people would be open to adding students with disabilities. And the second is, and I've just pulled it back up, the language is very similar. Legislative Council told us that 820, which was something else last time, it was Senate Bill 1538, would violate the Equal Protection Clause of the U.S. Constitution and the Equal Privileges and Immunities Clause of the Oregon Constitution. How has that been addressed this time?
Thank you, Chair Roblin and Senator Gelzer and committee. I'll answer the second one first. There's been a, and I know Senator Roblin has information, but it has been ruled that it's constitutionally all right. And so it has been, well,
Around the country, actually from the federal way, I don't know about the state because we haven't done this before, but when it comes to the federal one, this has been the way in which charter schools that want to get a particular group, they couldn't do it by just saying we're going to have entry for kids of color or whatever, but by waiting the lottery and still making it a lottery process, they said it met the Constitution. So apparently this, and we'll have Karin explain this again a little later, but from everything that I, the documents we've got back and forth, they've said this has become the way they are doing this across the country now, and it seems to have met that deal. And I know it was a problem before because I asked about it as well. So, but that was the word we got back. We don't know. I mean, there has been no case with regard to this with respect to Oregon, so that's an issue that we'll have to, what may have to be discussed at some time.
Do we have a new opinion from, a formal opinion from legislative council?
We asked them for an opinion, so I will find out where that's at.
Thank you.
And we'll get one between now and whenever we have the actual work session.
Thank you. And then the first question.
Yeah, the first question, as Chair Roblin and Senator Gelzer, we have many things in common, and having the opportunity for all, and underlined, all students is really important in our process. So I certainly, as an individual, am in support if we need to change the definition a little bit to have students with disabilities included, because, yeah, it's just important that we bring the circle tight and hold them all sacred.
And the issue with that, part of the 19 is that they don't take all the double weight, and they don't take the other weights, even in this new formula for special needs, because they know that there's always going to be a responsibility from the other district as part of their responsibility. So they haven't, I think that was specifically left out so that the districts would continue to have it, because even if they come to the group, there's still going to be responsibilities from the district.
And I think I had an exchange with Karen about this. I think that because she had said if we weighted them, they would be more likely to come, and that the funding wasn't equitable. But I don't think we can do
I know,
that.
I don't think.
I mean, you have to separate it. So even if there was an 819, I think you'd have to put students with disabilities in there without regard to how the funding stream goes. Works, because
right.
they have to have equal access
right.
to entry.
Right. So we'll work that one out.
Right. Well, and chair and committee, as somebody that's been an administrator, there's always a way to work that out to make sure that students get their appropriate education plan and that they're provided for.
Okay.
I love all kids, so I don't. we just can't leave any of them without. So thank you.
Thank you. And Karen, you can come on back up, and we'll go to our next. If you are you done with that? Okay.
Me? Yes.
Okay. Thank you, everybody, for allowing a moment to get to speak on behalf of these two bills that are so important for us. My name is Alika Gardner, and I'm a baby compared to Ms. Tara over here, who's been doing this for 12 years. But I've been in education a really long time and had the opportunity to teach in public and in private and in charter schools, as well as in adult programs, and been working with equity for the last 12 years or so in a variety of different means of working with families, working with students, working with institutions around equity and diversity. And I would say in the scheme that I'm in, those concepts of access and equity and social justice have been in my conscious world and conversation for a long
time. You can push the microphone a little ways away from you. You don't have to be close to that one. You can sit back about a foot.
Thank you. Can I yell at you? Just kidding.
Right, yeah.
These are concepts that, so it's such a pleasure to be in a place like this and have those things talked about as not asides, but as central pieces of what our work and our job is around education. I know personally I come to this place having been offered many privileges by my particular situation in life and my parents and their own educational background. But I will say that standing here today is a challenge. So I'd like to be able to speak to you, but what I'm actually going to do is read to you from some thoughts so I can make sure that I really have am able to communicate what I want. As Karen mentioned, I'm a co-founder of Kairos PDX. We're a brand new charter school. We exist to close the opportunity and achievement gaps for our kids of color. Kairos PDX is one push of many to offer possibilities in education. We, again, are excited that we can just openly discuss the fact that we've inherited a system that has long created paths that went right through access and privilege and power. And education is no exception, and in order to see change, there actually has to be change. And charters and our charter are a part of that manifestation of the optimism and dedication of educators who still believe that education is our best lever for change. I'm here today, though, not so much to talk about Kairos, but because at the heart of both 819 and 820 is equity. And because equity is one of those words that we are talking about a lot and throwing around, for the purposes of just these few moments, I want to define the concept for our shared understanding. We all know equity doesn't mean that we get the same, right? Because if we follow that line of thinking through, if we understand that we're working on a system that already privileges some, if we continue to give same, we've continued that privilege and that cycle. But what isn't always evident in that, because it feels noble and it feels important, is that equity is also an incredibly difficult process of sharing power and shifting injustice. It is uncomfortable. It requires those that have to give to those who don't. And while most of us, I think, want to be that person who will give, really, if we're honest, very few of us get the opportunity or take the chance to act on that conviction. Equity is hard, and it requires we grapple with our privilege and give up the myth that we've all earned the resources independent of established systems of support. It requires that we endure the frustration of interest convergence when our desire to help those that are under-resourced collides with our own interest in holding on to what we have. It's made even more intense in a place that, like what we have here in Oregon education, where there just simply are not enough resources to go around for any of our schools and any of our children. Our public schools just don't have enough. It's painful to give of those resources when you are already feeling strapped, and that makes equity in this conversation particularly difficult. It truly is painful to write a ship that, while unruly and tough to sail, ultimately leans in your favor. That is exactly, however, what we're asking you all to help us do. We're asking for your help to right the ship, to lead with the laws in the time-honored tradition of social justice fighters before us. Children who go to charter schools are afforded less than their counterparts at other public schools. As Tara pointed out, they're not worth less, and they're not less expensive to educate, not less important or less valued, but the law as written treats them as though they were, and we can change that. Changing this determination, worth less to worth same, is less radical, really, than the ideas that we've already embraced, that some children are actually more expensive to educate, and moving in that direction and going ahead and acknowledging that and giving those weighted situations. In many instances, that equity demands that some be given more. I've seen firsthand in my experience, I've worked in private education for a long time, the vast difference in what's offered to children based on the resources their families are able to bring to the table. But please help us to rectify this kind of inequity from happening in our public school system. Finally, our school, along with many others, understand the necessity of a diverse student body in equipping children for the realities of our society. We understand that an excellent education must necessarily include multiple perspectives and include cultural competency. We, along with other schools, carry this value against a backdrop of historical exclusion practices that leave our communities racially segregated and our communities of color small and spread out. If we just take the African American community, for example, in the 2013 census, we were about 2% of the total population of Oregon. If, and this is a big if, we are able to somehow neutralize the generations of active disenfranchisement and disillusionment and create access points to our lottery, if we do that for all of those people, then if the lottery is just left to chance the way it is, then we would have, by the numbers, 2 African-American students for every 100 students across the state. I just want you to consider for a second if you've ever been 2 of 100. I would hazard a guess that the majority of people of color in the room know that feeling and know the difficulties of forming a strong identity against that backdrop. My oldest son and my daughter know that world really well. Their experience is a piece of what propels me to believe we can create schools and communities with intentional pedagogies, an excellent education, and positive cultural environments all together that both support and equip children to be change agents, all children, as we recover from the trauma of racism. Winning our lottery allows us to push back on that probability and provide a community of support and excellence for all our kids. Winning our lottery allows us to address the historic disenfranchisement of children and families by race and culture and poverty and language. 820 acknowledges that when taking on the work of combating privilege, equity does mean that some children deserve more. Finally, last thing, Kairos PDX is a willing and engaged participant in this work to turn around the school experience and outcomes for our kids of color. We are on mission with our district, and we are indeed partnered with them in some ways, as we have teachers joining with us from district schools to learn together about new ideas and methodologies. We are doing our very best to serve as that learning laboratory that charters are intended to be. We are a baby school, but we are full of optimism and innovative energy. But really, we cannot fulfill our potential without the baseline financial equity and the ability to right the systemic inequity of access. And for that, we really, truly need your help. Thank you for your time.
So, thank you, and we'll ask questions, but I want to clarify. We have 2 statements from Hannah that about some amendments that aren't out there, that the bill itself is okay as it is first written. Amendments may be a difficult, and we'll post them on the Sun for us to see.
Thank
so
you.
There are some, they're concerned still about parts of those. There was a recommendation from the U.S. Department of Education about how to go about doing this kind of things. Ours is getting closer. to those recommendations. So I think that, and she explains that in the whole thing. So I agree.
And can I ask this panel about adding students with disabilities into that list of historically underserved?
Whoever wants to answer.
I did it again. I'm sorry.
It's okay. It's just there. You want to get there.
Sorry. First timer. So I think it's twofold. It's both of what you've heard so far. There's the, at least from our perspective and point of view, the interest in including all, right? So when we think of disenfranchised, we think of kids who have been underserved, certainly, and not having their needs met, which is when we think about equity and making sure all needs are met, children with disabilities fall in that category for sure. I think the reason that the funding comes into play is because of what Senator Roblin mentioned, like the funding comes in a different way. I think also statistically within charters, we're meeting that population in a much more, statistically, consistent way, where we do have good numbers in that for kids who do have disabilities and have had disabilities and have had IEPs and all of those things. I think that's one of the reasons that it's not front and center on sort of the bill, because we are serving that population fairly well statistically from who we have in our buildings, and are working hard to continue to do so.
Can I follow up?
Yeah.
In your building, how many students do you have with intellectual disability, and how many students do you have that have multiple disabilities, so wheelchair, ventilator?
We just opened. We have 44 kids, and we don't have anyone in a wheelchair or on a ventilator. Personally, us, we don't. We have 8 kids currently right now on IEPs, so working in that. And we have kindergartners and first graders, too. So just that's our school. I don't know.
An intellectual disability? Do any of those 8 experience intellectual disabilities?
Only that would be served by a typical IEP, not that would require additional to that.
Thank you. And Mr. Chair, my point would be students with significant IEPs are historically underserved, also in charters. They typically are not enrolled, and if we're looking at adding those, it strikes me as obvious that they're left out, and I worry that it's because of the funding, which would not be appropriate.
I agree.
Can I
And the reality is that the other district would still continue to have some responsibility, and they would be spending for some of those kids as well.
Yeah, that's all I was going to say, is that it just gets more complicated. That's like all I wanted to suggest. Between the additional responsibility and between all of our hearts, which are to actually serve kids really, really well and make sure that that's happening.
But would you accept adding students with disabilities into that definition?
That was going to be my short answer. Yes.
Great. Thank you.
Yes. The short answer is yes. We were getting into a longer conversation because it is complicated. But, yeah, the short answer is yes. It was not overt. It was not intentional. It wasn't even conscious that we did not include them in the first draft. So we are working on amendments on this bill and on the other because both of these issues are very complicated and very sensitive. So we have amendments in the works on both.
And I think I agree with you. I think the home district or the sponsoring district and everybody have a real interest in serving all the needs of these kids. And so figuring out how to have that reaction work together, it sounds like at least in one district you've got district personnel that help with that, which makes it really good. That's not true of every district, and I know that, but maybe we can find a best practice to get that to happen too, which would be helpful for all of our kids. Any other questions for this panel? Thank you very much. I appreciate you coming.
Yes, thank you.
So again, we're going to go with the 2 minutes, I think. Yeah, we can finish these people. Just remember that there's a lot of other people waiting to talk. So with that, we'll go to a fifth grade student by the name of Alyssa Heikes, Shell Robbins, and Billy Ladd. All of those people can come on up right now. Is Billy there? I know there's an overflow group, so if you're still coming, just come on down. Thank you. Is that Mr. Ladd? And I guess we can start with Alyssa. Hope I said that right. Just take a breath, relax, have fun. Nobody's watching.
Good afternoon, Chair Roblin and the members of the committee. My name is Alyssa Heikes. I'm a fifth grade student at the Ivy School, a public charter school in Northeast Portland. Every public charter school has a different educational model. Mine is Montessori. It's a perfect school for me because I have the freedom to choose where I sit, choose what works I can do, and how fast or slow I do them. I get 1 to 2 to 3 hour work cycles every day to focus on one thing after another for a long period of time. I get to do lots of projects, and some of them I can choose what things I would like to research on. One of my most recent projects was on the Chinook tribe. I researched their basic lifestyle, built a diorama, and made a presentation to my class. My papa Daryl brought his huge collection of Native American artifacts and shared them with my whole class. We got to hold beaver heads, arrows, spears, and learn how the Native Americans of the Pacific Northwest used them. We learn all our academics, plus we learn how to have a peaceful world. We have mediations to solve conflicts and safe places if we need to calm down. I wish all the people in the world knew how to participate in effective mediation and calm down.
So do we all.
We all wish the same thing, so that was
I like Senate Bill 819, and I hope you do too. The reason I think kids in charter schools should get the same amount of money as kids in district schools is that we are worth the same. And charter schools are public schools. We are all just kids trying to learn what we need to know and have a good life and make this world a better place for everyone. Our school has a hard time finding the money to pay for many basic things like counselors, instructional materials, PE, music, and lunch. Also, our school can't afford some basic classroom materials like pencils and paper, so our parents are constantly asked to donate things. My family can usually afford to do this, but some can't. And Ivy doesn't have enough money to backfill. Any kid should be able to go to public school and not feel bad whether they can pay for anything or not. I don't understand why the law shortchanges kids in charter schools. Fairness is super important to kids. I really hope you will change the law. Please vote yes for Senate Bill 819. Also, please vote yes for Senate Bill 820. It will allow my school and other schools like it to bring low income to disadvantaged kids into Montessori. Other charter schools want to serve more diverse kids and need Senate Bill 820 to help them do that. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll go all the way through, and then we'll have questions for all of you, so you can think about that.
Chair Roblin, members of the committee, I'm Shel Robbins, and I'm the executive director of Four Rivers Community School in Ontario, Oregon. Thank you for the opportunity to testify before you today. 100% on track for graduation, 100% applied for community college or university, and 85% have earned 12 to 24 college credits by eighth grade. This is the first graduating eighth grade class from Four Rivers Community School, now graduating from high schools in Mount Hare County. Four Rivers Community School is a K-8 dual language immersion school with 255 students. 85% of our students are Latino, 80% qualify for free and reduced lunch, and 11% of our students qualify for special education. We are so proud of their accomplishments and the success of our program. Four Rivers Community School is making a difference in Mount Hare County. Four Rivers Community School is here to ask for your support of Senate Bill 820. As a dual language immersion school, it's imperative that we continue to serve the students that benefit most from these innovative models. Dr. Catherine Lindholm Leary and other scholars have conducted large-scale longitudinal studies demonstrating the significant impact that dual language programs have for all students, but cites that programs provide the greatest benefit to English language learners. One of the basic four components of dual language schools is to have half of your students speaking a partner language, in our case Spanish, and 50% English. This provides the essential peer models in each language. Classes are at Four Rivers, classes are taught each language 1 week at a time. To achieve this important component, traditional public schools in Oregon have two lotteries, one lottery for native English speakers and one lottery for speakers of other languages. Since the school's opening in 2003, I've asked for a waiver to the one lottery charter law three times. Although the state board understands the importance and need for two lotteries, they've been unable to make the exception. In the kindergarten class of 2013, Four Rivers only had 5 Spanish speakers out of 26. Dual language programs are only effective with language minority and majority models. A weighted lottery would limit the risk of having English language dominant classrooms and provide much needed access to underserved families. Today, I would like to ask for your support for this bill and help Four Rivers Community School continue to be a promising model program in our state. In addition, we would also greatly appreciate your support of Senate Bill 819. Funding is a concern, and we appreciate your understanding of the importance of equitable funding as we serve Oregon's future. Thank you.
You don't have to be very close. You can move it away a little bit.
I don't have a booming voice.
Yeah.
Chair Roblin, committee members, thank you for the opportunity to testify before you today. My name is Billy Ladd. I'm a lifelong resident of Portland, Oregon, in the state, of course, and I have two young children. My daughter is in kindergarten at Kairos PDX, which you've heard a number of wonderful things about this morning. I also serve on the board of directors at the Ivy School, where Alyssa attends, and had the opportunity to do an observation as a board member there recently, and walking through the halls and sitting in the classrooms, I can see a lot of activity, a lot of what Alyssa described. I was impressed to see that happening there. The diversity in the school is something that we struggle with as a board, and we've implemented a number of methods to try to address that, but we need your help with SB 820 to further that. We do community outreach. We're in community centers and churches and trying to educate people on the Ivy School. It's a Montessori-based school, as Alyssa alluded to, and it's a public charter and it's free. Unfortunately, the number of applicants that we get, it's not in a level playing field. So we think that having a weighted lottery will help level that playing field to help us to increase the diversity at the Ivy School, as well as the ongoing enrollment at Kairos PDX moving forward. The Ivy School started about 6 years ago, started off as a very diverse school. We went out and, or I wasn't there when it started, but the team went out and to the community and got a pretty diverse pool of applicants. But over time, that changed as the word spread about the benefits of the school and the Montessori curriculum, and the diversity has slid since then. So we're doing things or whatever we can to address this today, and Senate Bill 820 is going to help us move forward with that effort.
Thank you very much. Any questions for this group? Ms. Hikas, you did a very nice job. Thank you. Karen Belzy, Velvet Nichols, and Corinne Conley. And again, thanks all for being here. And on deck, so people know, it'll be Stephanie Walker, John Nelson, and Perry Gardner. So, go ahead.
Thanks so much. Chair Roblin, members of the committee, my name is Karen Belsey, and I'm the administrator at the Opal School at the Portland Children's Museum in Portland. I'm also the parent of a high school student in a local public high school in Portland. Thank you for the opportunity to testify before you today. When the Oregon legislature established charter schools in 1999, it identified a clear intention and nine goals in ORS 338-15. Shortly thereafter, Opal School opened its doors. I'm pleased to tell you today that all nine of the goals identified have been vigorously pursued at Opal. I heartily encourage you to come visit our school or the local charter school in your district to see these goals in action. I've identified in my more extensive testimony what the intention and the goals are, and I'll include those in my written statement. Opal is a small school with a big mission. It aims to strengthen public education by provoking fresh ideas regarding environments where creativity, curiosity, and the wonder of learning thrive. That work begins in the classroom, where teacher researchers identify children's natural learning strategies and the conditions that support their intellectual, social, and emotional development. We collaborate with one another, children, and families to understand children's thinking and to bring those ideas to a world that benefits from their unique perspectives. Because Opal teachers listen attentively to children, we know that children are complete, valuable citizens with important contributions now that they don't exist in a state of becoming to only be valued when they are adults. With the hoped-for and anticipated passage of Senate Bill 820, Opal School is well-situated to serve greater numbers of historically underserved students and bring a powerful model of education to them so they're able to be valued for their unique gifts, perspectives, and knowledge, experience, and curiosity. The research being conducted on an ongoing basis in Opal School classrooms not only serves Opal students, it's a treasured professional development resource utilized by teachers, schools, and districts. Opal hosts workshops, symposia, and study groups, produces videos and books, and presents at conferences. We work closely with neighboring schools and districts to support their work meeting the needs of students. Children, administrators, and superintendents regularly tour Opal School and observe classes to consider the implications to their programs. During just this year, more than 1,000 educators will attend significant presentations by Opal teachers that illuminate classroom stories in ways that extend participants' ideas regarding what is possible in school. This service to the larger profession, both mission-driven and identified as a central goal in the charter legislation, comes in addition to the same workload that all teachers assume. Opal teachers create curriculum, assess learning, steward student development, and coordinate groups of children while creating these professional development experiences for colleagues. Incredibly, Opal teachers do this work at a fraction of the salary of their district peers, earning between $35,000 and $39,000 a year and receiving lesser benefit packages than these peers. And while we are unable to pay our teachers like their public school colleagues, as charter schools, we do participate in the PERS system as we should. This employer payment of 20% in addition to the 6% individual account program from teachers comes at a considerable cost to our teachers in the immediate term. Too often it causes them to leave. Teachers who have left Opal report that their take-home pay nearly doubles when they move to district-operated schools. While Opal's service to the larger profession has been recognized and supported through grants, such awards cannot provide the stability necessary to increase wages. Passing Senate Bill 819 will result in a group of Oregonians who provide a significant public service, receiving a living wage, something which teachers, students, and educators statewide will benefit from. This bill is essential for us to be able to continue to achieve the goals set out for us by the state. I urge you to pass Senate Bill 819 and Senate Bill 820 so that students and the broader education community can fully benefit from what Opal and many charter schools have to offer. Thank you.
Thank you.
Chair Roblin, members of the committee, I'm Velvet Nichols, and I am a student at Trillium Charter School in Portland, Oregon. Thank you for the opportunity to testify before you today. I've been at Trillium off and on since kindergarten. And the last time I left, I went to Park Rose High School because they could offer things that Trillium couldn't, like choir, theater, sports. I love Trillium, the teachers, and the academics there, but we don't have the funds to offer students certain electives or extracurriculars, which makes students feel compelled to leave. Yet, I returned to Trillium after a semester at Park Rose because their academics just didn't work for me, and there wasn't the sense of community that I really felt at Trillium. Trillium works for students because of our small classrooms, emphasis on community, and the encouragement students get to think critically. It feels really awful to have to pick between your academics and your passions. But that's a situation that my peers and I often face. I have many friends that have been at Trillium for years but left to go to other schools so they could run track or other things, that we just don't have those resources. Trillium and other charter schools, I'm sure, put all of their resources into the most necessary things like English, math, and science, but still can't afford a full science lab like district-run schools can, or even new whiteboard markers, or pencils, or highlighters, the simplest things. And then there's another problem, and that's the teachers. Over my time at Trillium, I have seen a lot of turnover in the staff, some years at 50%. And I've seen teachers who helped start the school leave. And most of them don't want to leave because they love our school, but they can't support their families or themselves. And since they are highly qualified, they easily find other jobs at private schools and make double what they were making at Trillium. But when we lose teachers, we lose opportunities. My classmates and I wouldn't be here if it weren't for them. They work extra hours and scrape up their own money to organize academic field trips and community building activities. And they don't get compensated for their efforts. If our funding were to increase, we would have stable staff, opportunities for arts, sports, and support for student-run clubs. Academic field trips and immersion into a community would be more commonplace, and charter school students would be allowed the same opportunities as district-run schools. I have seen my school struggle with debt. I've seen other charter schools shut down because they couldn't afford to even stay open. I hope my testimony made it apparent that charter school students have the right to be seen as if we are students of district-run schools, and that charter schools deserve equitable funding. Please support Senate Bills 819 and 820.
Thank you.
Chair Roblin, members of the committee, my name is Kieran Connolly, and I'm the Executive Director of Trillium Public Charter School in Portland. Thank you so much for the opportunity to be able to testify here with all of you today. Trillium is a K-12 public charter school that's been open since 2001. As of the end of this school year, we will be the only charter high school remaining in our city. We are one of only two public K-12 schools in our city. We serve a unique and diverse population, including 65% that are experiencing poverty as measured by federal standards, and 18% that qualify for special education services. Both numbers are significantly higher than in our sponsoring district at large. As you've learned from Velvet, we do unique, important work to empower our students and to deliver to them a meaningful education. We also hold true to our responsibility as a charter to be innovative. We take wise risks in our education model and work to share our learning with our sponsoring school district. Our school is a model school for our district's equity work, and we've worked to be in a leadership position in bringing a proficiency-based education model to our school district. Our teachers work tirelessly not only to provide a quality education model for our students, but also to be constantly innovative in their work. We challenge each other and the education community as we were established to do. Our school is also a relationship-based model, which means that every student is known very well by multiple adults in our school. Our teachers make phone calls after hours, take students on campouts, college visits, outdoor school, and make home visits. They go above and beyond and ask for very little in return. However, I had two of my best teachers tell me just yesterday, each fighting back the sadness and the frustration that they were feeling that they loved Trillium, but they were worried about making enough money to be able to afford to send their own kids to college. Ken Gabbo is our high school social studies teacher. He's been at Trillium for 10 years. He often recounts having to teach outside in the pouring rain while Trillium was transitioning buildings. Ken's an exceptional teacher. Even 10 years into his teaching career, he often works late at night, his own kids wandering the hallways, so that he can be in a restorative justice meeting to advocate for one of his advisees. He's written his own textbook and designed curriculum specifically for our school. He MCs our high school graduation and oversees every student's senior project. He details his work in the school and conferences both nationally and locally. He's a tireless advocate for every student in the school and is as deeply committed to Trillium as anyone I've ever met. And yesterday he told me that he's not sure he can stay, because after 10 years and having a master's degree, he's scheduled to get a raise this year to $47,000. He has no savings and he's worried about sending his own kids to college. He told me yesterday, "I don't want to leave, but I don't know what else to do. I'd ask you to help me, but I know you're paying me every single penny that you can afford to. I want to spend the rest of my career working here, but I need to consider my family as well." Allie King is our middle school language arts teacher. Allie is in her second year teaching after 10 years in the social work world. She works like a combination of a social worker and a teacher. She works as a teacher to edit the papers of every single middle school student in our school because she alone comprises our entire middle school language arts department. Just to do this is incredible, but she doesn't stop there. She's an advisor to 23 students and fights for them like you'd expect a social worker to fight. Parent meetings, community meetings, democratic discussions. She saw that our students needed a health class, so she decided to teach it. She saw that they needed a group to talk about self-esteem, so she took it on. She knows all 200 kids in our upper school and cares deeply for every single one of them. She fights for kids even when they're driving her crazy, which is a very difficult thing to do. She has two children attending neighborhood public schools, both of whom qualify for free and reduced lunch. She told me yesterday the last thing she wants to do is leave Trillium, but she doesn't think she has a choice. She's an exceptional teacher with 2 years of experience and a master's degree, and she makes $36,000 a year. I'd hope to have her here with me today to tell you all this herself, but she's attending the Oregon Educator Fair to look for other jobs today. These two teachers are in no way an exception. Last year, we lost 50% of our teachers, including every single kindergarten through fifth grade teacher in our school. They have been replaced almost exclusively by first-year teachers this year. We have at most 3 years with most teachers before they move on to neighborhood schools. And last year, all but one of the 15 teachers we left did move on to neighborhood schools. We're training teachers for our school districts, and we're training teachers for the teachers' unions. I've always said that as a charter school, we have two primary reasons for being: to educate our students that we have in our building, and to drive innovation within the public education system. But we can't do that with one hand tied behind our back. We can't live up to the purpose of our founding as long as our students and teachers are only valued at 58 cents on the dollar. We are not a detraction from the public system. We are a fundamental part of it. We've learned from ecology that the greatest threat to a healthy ecosystem is a lack of diversity. We need to support and encourage diversity, or we will risk our public education system succumbing to a blight of stagnation. Help us to educate our kids. Help us to drive innovation. Please support Senate Bills 819 and 820.
Thank you. Any questions for this group? Thanks very much. So, Stephanie Walker, John Nelson, Perry Gardner, and after that group, which were the group that was signed up, again, we'll have Karin come back for a few moments, and then we're going to cut it down to fairly short, so think succinctly. If we're going to get everybody in, we're going to have to cut down to a minute or so on these others, so all the time it takes. I want to make sure we get as many people as we can to say something, and if someone has already said it before, you can add your part that you think is really important for us. So with that.
Is this good? Can you guys
sure.
Can hear me? Okay.
Yep.
Thank you, Chair Roblin, and the members of the committee. I appreciate the chance to testify in front of you today. My name is Stephanie Walker, and I'm the executive director of the Arthur Academy Charter Schools. Our charter schools are the biggest network of charter schools in Oregon. We have six charter schools. We serve just under 1,100 students, and we are in six different districts. We're David Douglas, Gresham, Portland, Reynolds, Woodburn, and St. Helens. So I would really like to talk about teachers. I want to go along with what Kieran said, so I will skip a little bit because I know I only have about a minute, but I would like to talk about teacher retention being one of our biggest challenges. Teachers work at Arthur Academy.
Did you introduce yourself?
Oh, Stephanie Walker.
Thank you, Stephanie.
Yes. I didn't do that? Sorry.
I'm not
Stephanie
sure
Walker,
she did. Okay,
executive
she did.
Director.
She did.
Okay. Teachers work at Arthur Academy because they believe in what we do and they love our mission. But many of our greatest teachers end up leaving just from salary and benefits alone. Many of them can make around $12,000 more per year at district-run schools with their level of schooling. So I'm just going to give you a couple of examples. A teacher at the David Douglas Arthur Academy right now is making $35,000 a year and would make just about $48,000 working in the district with the same level of schooling. That's a difference of about $12,000. A teacher at our Portland Arthur Academy is making $34,000 but would make almost $46,000 working for PPS. And last year we lost at our Gresham Arthur Academy a wonderful teacher. He left us making it about $35,000, and he went to a different district and makes just under $50,000. So not only is our salary not comparable, we also cannot offer the same type of health insurance, dental insurance, tuition reimbursement. And we, at one point, we have lost about half of our staff just last year at one of our schools alone. Our students thrive on structure, consistency, and familiarity with the teaching staff. I do not think that it's fair to anyone involved that our teachers have to choose between working at Arthur Academy, a school that they love and believe in, or needing to make a higher wage to support their family by working at a district-run school. And our other concern besides teacher retention, another big thing is facilities. We are literally tripping over each other trying to find space to teach our students. And we do also lack those same basics, such as most of our Arthur Academies don't have a gym. We don't even have a space large enough for assemblies. So I think I'd like you guys to go away with thinking about the fairness. And so thank you for the opportunity to testify, and I would be happy to answer any of your questions.
Thank you.
Chair Roblin, committee members, good afternoon. My name is John Nelson, lifelong Oregonian, product of Portland Public Schools, Mount Hood Community College, Portland State University, ooh-rah. My community service includes 10 years on the board of the Reynolds School District, as well as being a co-founder and board chair of the Arthur Academy for 5 years, as well as the Mastery Learning Institute and the 8th Academy, all charter schools. I'm going to skip some of this other stuff because I've handed my testimony to you. I'm currently a member of the leadership team at Nova Learning. Nova is a 420-student K-8 school serving East Multnomah County's Rockwood community. We are a majority-minority school. Now, I'm here to speak in support of SB 819. Some opponents of the legislation will say that the district will take a budgetary hit of X amount if this thing passes, when in reality they're currently profiting X amount on the backs of kids in charter schools. And they've been doing it for 15 years. It's a great deal for them, as much as 42% revenue for kids they don't educate, balancing their budgets on the backs of kids, in many cases vulnerable kids, like the ones at my school, who may actually ultimately wash out altogether. I do not want to perpetuate any adversarial relationship here. All public schools need more money. The base needs to be higher. But the fact is that kids in charter schools are the only ones that currently receive below that base in our system. I could spend time rallying on how certain lobbying forces tried to kill this thing off back when the legislation was first being developed. But I'd rather have a more positive vision of how passing this bill will help our school. So I want to just get right to it. We only get 80% of ADM. We don't get federal pass-through dollars. We don't get any of that. This creates gaps. One of the gaps is in technology. Our home district, Reynolds School District, the ratio of computers and devices to kids is 2-1. At our school, it's 14-1. This money will help us close that gap. Great schools begin with great teachers. At Nova, our teachers make approximately 78% of the beginning salary for teachers in the Reynolds School District, our sponsoring district. In addition, we can't match the step and column increases. We can't match the kinds of generous benefits offered by the district. It's real simple. Last year, we had to replace 24 out of 30 of our teachers. Passing SB 819 will help us close the gap in instructional experience. Nova is housed in an old furniture store. We've retrofitted it to meet our minimum needs, but our kids do without such basics as gym, playground, library, cafeteria, media lab, auditorium. Passing 819 will help us to improve the current facility and or save and be able to maybe get a better facility. All this said, our morale is really high. Our parents are engaged. Our students are engaged. It's a happy place. And our kids are academically achieving on par or better than the students in our traditional schools that serve our neighborhood. Just imagine what gains our students could make if their education, too, was funded equitably. Please support and encourage passage of SB 819. Thank you.
Thank you. Go just a little bit. Don't have to be right in it. That's fine. Yeah.
I won't make the same mistake my wife did. So, Senator Roblin, committee members, ladies and gentlemen, my name is Perry Gardner. I'm here to speak on the as a parent. And I came prepared to kind of wax eloquent and share facts and stats and all those different things, but then Alyssa Hikas spoke, so that kind of took it from me. But I'm here to speak as a parent, and I'm here to speak on behalf of charter schools and why we need your support. And I can only tell a story or tell you stories, and I would like to ask a question or questions. How many of you have children? Okay. Grandchildren, for that sake. Well, I have three. I have a 19-year-old, a 9-year-old who was asked to be here today, but she didn't want to come. She wanted to stay at school. She goes to the Opal School. So she decided to stay today. And then I have a 7-year-old. He's sitting in the back on his mom's lap. But I want to talk to you and speak to you a little bit this morning, just as a parent, what our Saturday mornings look like. Saturday mornings is the private time me and my wife get to talk about the week, to talk about the happenings of our days and what's going on with our kids. But largely sometimes that is interrupted by the pitter-patter of feet. Every morning you hear, and we try to decipher which one it is. Is this Makai's feet or Elijah's feet coming down the stairs? And oftentimes they come down the stairs to ask us questions about things that they're learning at their charter schools. And it's kind of phenomenal when our children are asking us questions. Yeah, they ask for, you know, the cereal. They ask for what television shows they can watch. But Makai comes down and asks, do we know what the layout of the solar system is? And I help God here, man. You know, but my point being is that he's learning. Our children are learning at our charter schools, and particularly they are learning at this charter school. And we have heard everyone speak about the need for funding. Yes, we need funding. And I'm a movie guy, and I can only share with movies. If you've watched it, I hope you. If you haven't watched the movie, I hope that you watch it. But it was one of the movies that really spoke to me was the movie Dead Poets Society. And it was not so much about what was going on with the kids, what they were learning, but it was what their engagement with the teachers, with their teacher, their professor. They engaged with this man, and they decided that they wanted to learn because they engaged with this man. Many have spoken on the behalf of needing this funding so that we can retain our teachers. And my son, he's engaged with his teacher. My daughter has engaged with her teacher. They get letters from their teachers, phone calls from the teachers. So I'm asking you to support this bill simply because my kids are learning, and I want them to continue to learn, and I hope that you are able to help us with this movement of this bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions? Thanks. Nice job. So next we can have Tom. Oh, yeah, Karin, you want to come back up to say a few words? And just remember, as the longer you speak, the fewer get to speak. So however you want to say.
Do you want me to speak, or do you have questions for me?
Anybody have any questions for Karin? No, we're good. So if you have a few things to wrap up that before you have the other people, we'll let you go.
Okay. Just to say that I did forget this in the beginning, so forgive me, Chair Roblin, Senator Cruz, who just left, and Representative Comp, who I didn't get to say this in front of, but we really appreciate your sponsorship of this bill, both of these bills, and your commitment to the kids in all of our public schools in this state. It means a great deal. Senator Haas also helped sponsor Senate Bill 820, which we also greatly appreciate. So I don't know what I have to say to wrap up, except thank you for your sponsorship. Thank you for hearing the bills. I think you know what the bills will do and what the bills won't do. If you have any questions about that, we'd be happy to answer any. I guess I would just wrap up to say we appreciate the steps that we're considering taking towards equity. We know that Senate Bill 819 will not get us to full parity, but it will get us closer. And as one of our speakers said, the charter kids are the only ones below the base. And I'll be honest, I was trying to get a quartet to come today to sing a song of kids about being below the base. I'm all about the base, not lower. But we couldn't find any kids that weren't embarrassed enough, you know, too embarrassed. So we weren't able to do that. But that's what's going through my mind. You know, we're all about the base. We talk about it constantly about K-12 education for hours and hours and hours, right? Ad nauseum. And yet our kids are the kids below the base. And how are we okay with that? We talk about equity all the time, and yet we know we have these kids. You know, this study that the Chalkboard Project and Echo Northwest just did, there was a national study last year. There was a study that was done of Oregon funding in charter schools, you know, in 2010. Now we're 5 years down the road, and it was called Unintended Consequences, that initial study was. Now we're 5 years down the road from that and thinking, I don't know if it's unintentional anymore. We know about it. And now that we know about it, we need to fix it, because with the knowledge comes the responsibility. So I guess I'll end with that. If you have any questions at the end, I'd be happy to answer.
Okay, thanks. So now we'll start with these lists, and there are a lot of you. So we'll start with Tom Isapalela, Danielle Till, and Michaela Rollins. And we'll put the little lighter on. So if you see this little green light out there, that's really good. When it turns to red, it's not so good. So that's the... That's kind of the indicator that it may or may your time is. And I'll tell you, a minute goes by really quickly. Yes. So just a warning. But we want to hear at least the bits that people want to say. So great. With that, watch the light, and whoever wants to start can go.
I'll start. Chair Roblin and members of the committee, thank you for giving me the opportunity to testify today. My name is Tom Palella, and I live in Oregon City. My wife and I are parents of two students who attend Alliance Charter Academy. We call it ACA, in Oregon City. Annie's in 8th grade and Caroline is in 7th grade. I'm also president of the ACA school board. Both of our daughters began attending ACA in the fifth grade. Prior to that, they attended Gaffney Lane Elementary School, which was a traditional public school in Oregon City. We were drawn to ACA because of its individualized approach to each child's education, its smaller class sizes, and its strong music program. Both of our girls love ACA. They love going to school, they love the learning environment, and they love their classes, with the exception of some occasional extra load of homework. As you heard today, public charter schools in Oregon operate at substantially lower funding levels than other public schools. It's amazing, if not miraculous, to me what ACA is able to accomplish with this limited budget. I'm asking you to support SB 819 because it provides equitable funding for public charter schools. It seems like a reasonable request. It doesn't provide charter schools with more funding, actually a little bit less than other public schools. ACA is an amazing program. It's an educational jewel in our state that I think we all should be proud of. I hope you will consider all supporting Senate Bill 819. Thank you.
Good job. That was quick, wasn't it?
Chair Roblin, members of the committee, I'm Danelle Till. I'm an educational specialist, the bookkeeper. I do human resources, and I've been a teacher at Alliance Charter Academy in Oregon City, and thank you for the opportunity. I think what I would like to highlight, as has been highlighted about teachers, is what happens in our school. In our school, because of the funding gap, we have classroom teachers that are paid at about a third. Although if they were full-time, which we have lots of part-time, they would be doing 8 preps. Our budget that we're looking at now we're trying to decrease our budget by 10% and still provide for those teachers. We lost 4 pivotal teachers last year, which meant we couldn't offer marketing or our business classes. If we had equitable funding, we'd be in a much different position. And since our students are public school students and also go to a public charter school, we think they should have equitable funding. Thank you.
Thank you. Exceptionally well done.
Chair Roblin, members of the committee, thank you for giving me the opportunity to present to you. I'm Michaela Rollins, and I attend ACA. And for your sake and mine, I'll keep it short. I previously went to a traditional public school. I went to Ogden Middle School, but it didn't fit with me. I am a little bit active and talkative, so more hands-on was my way of learning. I thrive here, but when I went to withdraw from the public school I was in, the administrator said to me, "I don't see how they can educate you with half the budget," and that kind of scared me a little bit, but it turned out great. And it's because they sacrifice and they spend their time and they are willing to give up what is necessary to provide, but it shouldn't be necessary for them to sacrifice to provide. And equitable funding will help not only the current students but future students and give the same opportunity to experience educational and personal success. And I'm thankful for the opportunity to present to you today.
Thank you very much. Mm-hmm. Any questions? Mm-hmm. Thanks. So, we're going to do another little thing because we have Senator Girard here, and we try to help our senators come and go. So we're going to leave those two open, and we're going to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 730. Senator Girard.
Colleagues. For the record, I'm Senator Fred Girard, Senate District 9. I just want to bring a bill to you. It's called Senate Bill 730, and this is a very simple bill. What it would do is it establishes a fund for the conversion of oil and other fossil fuels to woody biomass. Woody biomass is considered a very green energy, and in rural schools, it's also, in a lot of areas, is very abundant. I think a lot of you know that we have a problem in our forests with an excess, an abundance of fuel sitting on the floor, and this would give another reason to make use of that fuel. So anyway, this bill is real simple. It tells the Department of Energy to set up a grant program, and then there would be certain the applicant, the school, would have to meet certain criteria. So it's a very simple bill. It just promotes woody biomass, and it sets up a conversion policy for rural schools. And that's basically it in a nutshell. Okay. So if you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them. This came about just we were sitting around the table one day, and there is an individual that actually works for the Forestry Department. And believe it or not, he works for the biomass resource specialist for the forestry. I never knew such an individual existed. So we started talking about what we could do to promote it, and this was one of the suggestions that we came up with. Appreciate it that if you'd pass it out, but understand that it would cost some money because you're going to have to set up a fund. But maybe set it up the Ways and Means so we could discuss that.
Okay. Any questions for Senator Gerard?
Okay.
I thank you for bringing the bill.
I'm on a bill.
So with that, we'll go back to our hearings on the other two bills. We'll see if we get to think creatively and figure out how things work here. So Angela Griffith, Marjorie Griffith, and we'll also bring Hollander Wright on up. And we'll wait and see. He might be outside, so. Oh, there he comes. So you can get started.
Chair Roblin, members of the committee, I'm Angela Griffiths, a mother of two students at Alliance Charter Academy in Oregon City. There are so many things I could say, but we're on time lapse, so I'm going to keep it short. One of the things I really, really appreciate about the school is the way that the classes are structured. It's by skill level, not by grade level. And this is important to us because my youngest daughter is developmentally delayed. And she functions about four grade levels before her chronological age. One of the things I really, really love about the school is that in each classroom there's a wide age range. Since it's typical in our school culture to have younger kids and older kids together, my daughter doesn't particularly stand out as being unusual. And because she feels comfortable in the environment, she doesn't have to be worried about social difficulties so she can focus on her learning. For example, in her math class, she's in second grade family math that focuses on teaching the parents and the students how to work together with manipulatives. Well, typically you wouldn't have a sixth grader work with her mother in a classroom setting, but because of the way our school is structured, that's not unusual, and I appreciate that about our school. Thank you.
Thank you. Impressively done.
Okay, this is a good spot. Chair Roblin? Members of the committee, I'm Marjorie Griffiths, and I'm a student at Alliance Charter Academy in Oregon City. Thank you for this opportunity to testify before you today. I'm here to talk about how amazing my school is. There are so many things about I love going there, but I did narrow it down for you guys. All students, 1st through 12th grade, have a say in what classes they take based on what works best for them and their family. In addition to the basic classes, there are so many great electives to choose from, such as fencing, orchestra, sign language, stop motion animation, ukulele, and many others that can help them find their passions and creativity. The school is very unique because it is not separated by grade but by skill level. For example, my stagecraft class, there are kids whose ages range from 4th to 8th grade, and in my Algebra 1 class, the ages range from 7th to 12th grade. The kids at lunch have the same time, so that allows them to mingle so that they can have friends who are above and below their age level. That is the main thing I love so much about this school, and I would be so grateful if you guys could pass the law.
Thank you.
Chair Roblin,
sorry. That's perfect. No, right where it was good.
Members of the committee, my name's Hollander Wright, and I'm 10. Thanks for letting me testify before you. So what I was going to say is I had to miss my fencing class today. I had to miss it today to come to this because I thought it was really important. But if I came because if this law doesn't get passed, I might not have a fencing class. I might not have orchestra. I won't have so many other things that I really love. So if you could please pass this law, it would be really nice for me. Thank you.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Very well done. And no questions. So thank you. Thanks for coming and giving up your fencing class. With that, we'll have Anna Bloomer, Nathan Molden, and Carolyn Lai. And on deck, I think I will move to Kristen Miles, Kevin Strong, and Lori Wimmer.
Chair Roblin, members of the committee, can you hear me?
Yep.
Is that okay? All right. My name is Shauna Bloomer, and I am a public school teacher. I've been employed or worked, lived my whole life, and a public teacher in the state of Oregon for over 20 years. And I currently work at Lyons Charter Academy. And I do have my master's degree in education. And really quickly, because I know you've heard everything, but I want to give you a little bit about ACA's role of educational specialist. So I'm an educational specialist in addition to a special education coordinator at our school. My educational specialist role, I meet with students one-on-one, 1 hour every single week face-to-face. It is an amazing role to have these kids so engaged and active in their education. I get to help them plan. I get to listen to play the trumpet. I get to hear them speak French. We problem solve. We plan their education. We meet with their teachers. In addition to the students and staff, I have the opportunity to build relationships with parents and families. So that is a role that I have never done before, and it's amazing. I invite you anytime to come see our school. You'll be blown away. Thank you.
Thank you.
Chair Roblin, members of the committee, I am Nathan Maudlin, and I am a student at Alliance Charter Academy in Oregon City. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today. I am here to tell you about one of the educational opportunities my school offers. As you know, one of the primary missions of a charter school is to provide innovative academic opportunities, and I can personally attest to how ACA has done this. I am currently a member of the Alliance College Experience, which is a program that allows select high school students to take classes at the local community community college. This has allowed me to further expand my experience in subjects that I am particularly passionate about, and I have found that it has opened up academic opportunities in postgraduate opportunities, such as university study. I have been accepted to 4 of my top universities for this next year, and I am very excited to pursue that, and I don't think that I would have been able to do it without some of the opportunities that Alliance Charter Academy has allowed me. Even though Senate Bill 819 will not affect me personally, I hope that you will pass it as it will provide the best opportunities for the future of my school. Thank you for the time.
Thank you.
Chair Roblin and members of the committee, I'm Caroline Lee, a co-founder of Hope Chinese Charter School in the Beaverton School District. HCCS is the first and only Chinese immersion public school on Portland's west side. Thank you so much for the opportunity to testify today. I'm the mother of 2 little girls and an international marketing professional, and I support SB 819. Good educational programs are mandatory in Oregon to keep us competitive, and charter schools often fill a gap left by district-run schools. In my case, the gap was Chinese immersion. Mandarin immersion is identified as a critical language by the federal government, and China's economy is expected to outpace ours in just 10 years. China is Oregon's largest trading partner. Our founders also developed a positive behavior program that teaches global citizen skills that lay the foundation for preventing violence at school, succeeding at work, and solving big world problems. As you've heard, there is a huge gap. We receive 42% less public funding. It's unrealistic to expect charter schools to continue providing high-quality programs that we are chartered with a 42% year-on-year accumulated budget shortfall. We are serving the public, so we can't charge tuition. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Any questions? Thank you very much, all for being here. And after our, Kristen Miles, Kevin Strong, Lori Wimmer, on deck will be Victor DePablos, Brett Duvall, and Matthew Ho. And thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Chair Roblin and members of the committee. My name is Kristen Miles, and I'm the program director of charter schools for the Portland Public School District. We sponsor 9 schools and have 2 state-sponsored schools within our boundaries. There are close to 2,000 students in PPS charter schools, and this number grows each year. I appreciate the chance to speak with you about Senate Bill 819. At PPS, we consider our charter schools an important part of our portfolio of options for families. We host monthly charter meetings and invite speakers from other departments to provide information and training. We involve all PPS charter schools in our district's racial equity work and provide an open invitation to district's PD, including the district's Leadership Academy for principals. PPS staff in accounting analyze every charter school's financial deliverables and frequently meet with those charter schools that may have challenges maintaining financial stability. The PPS Research and Evaluation Department collects, maintains, evaluates, and reports charter schools' performance data and provides individualized training and test administration. PPS provides TriMet bus passes to all charter high school students at no cost to the charter schools. PPS also provides access to collaboration software, a PPS email account for every charter school, and provides Synergy accounts, student information system accounts, all 3 of which are charged to PPS and which are not charged to charter schools. All districts must provide oversight of all charter school operations, finances, and student performance, and this oversight requires resources. It is not free to provide. School districts are required to provide oversight of a charter school's performance and compliance with the law and the contract. Districts provide direct services to all special education students in charter schools. They act as the fiscal agent for charter schools and as the accountable body of all student performance data. Senate Bill 819 requires that all funds withheld from charter school payments be used for charter school administrative costs, and we believe that the current level of funding retained from charter school payments is utilized for these purposes. As such, we were interested in how much it actually costs to sponsor charter schools. PPS did a survey of all PPS departments and employees who did work with charter schools or the charter school office in the 2013-14 year. 95 individuals responded. The survey asked individuals to estimate in hours or by percentage how much time they had spent working on tasks related to charter schools. Every individual's reported time was then valued by applying this percentage or number of hours to her gross annual wage. The survey also collected data on the value of consumable materials or supplies that each department provided to charter schools, including the cost of technology provided to charter schools. The total estimated value of all costs for the 2013-14 school year was $1,855,000. The money retained by PPS after passing through the required percentage of funds to charter schools was $1,784,000. In other words, we estimate that PPS spent $70,801 more on the work of sponsoring charter schools than was retained. Worthy of note that this survey was done in a year in which PPS had no applications and no anomalous emergencies. If the study had been done in this year, that would have been a different story. If this funding to the district is lost, we and many other districts will be forced to reduce our supports to charter schools. It is likely that we would have to charge them for student information system accounts, email accounts, multimedia library access. All departments would have to scale back their support and resources, and our focus would necessarily turn more purely toward compliance and away from support. In conclusion, we oppose Senate Bill 819, and we hope you will do so too. Thank you for your time.
Chair Roblin and members of the committee, my name is Kevin Strong. I am the business manager for the Sweet Home School District, and I am testifying in opposition to Senate Bill 819. I understand that Senate Bill 819 supporters are trying to raise additional revenue for their schools. However, this bill raises numerous concerns. In the interest of time, I'll skip my first through fifth concerns, but I would encourage you to consider them in the written record. Instead, I'd like to discuss 2 problems with the existing funding formula that Senate Bill 819 does not address. First, the state school fund formula assumes a charter school has the same percentage of economically disadvantaged students as the school district where it is located, and additional funding is then given to the charter school. In our district, the charter school has historically had a much lower free and reduced eligibility percentage than our district operated schools. In addition, the homeless percentages at our 6 district operated schools range from 9% to 13%. The homeless percentage at our charter school is 3%. The legislature should allow school districts to allocate state funds intended for economically disadvantaged students based on a charter school's homeless or free and reduced lunch eligibility information as compared to the rest of the schools in the district. Doing so will also provide a financial incentive for charter schools to reach out to economically disadvantaged students. Second, the state school fund formula assumes a charter school has the same average teacher experience as the school district where it is located. Consequently, the funding calculation provides incentive for a charter school to locate in a school district where the district has more experienced teachers than the charter school. By doing so, the charter school receives more funding at the school district's expense. An easy solution is for the legislature to allow school districts to pay charter schools based on the charter school's actual teacher experience instead. Doing so will also provide a financial incentive for charter schools to hire and retain more experienced teachers. Finally, I would appreciate the opportunity to work with the bill's advocates to make sure we are comparing apples to apples when providing revenue and cost information. Several years ago, the Northwest Center for Educational Options published a report titled Unintended Consequences, an analysis of charter school funding in Oregon. The report compared the average revenue received per student for charter schools to the average revenue received per student for school districts. When you closely examine the data for our district, you discover the following. The study double counted over $1.4 million that was actually a transfer of already counted district revenue to another fund to make PERS pension bond debt service payments. The study included food service revenue, event admission fees, and facility use fees as district revenue, but did not count these items as charter school revenue. Instead, the only amount counted as charter school revenue was what the school district passed through to the charter school. The study counted grant funds as district revenue, but did not count any grants or funds received by the charter school from other sources as charter school revenue. The study counted all special education revenue as district revenue and none as charter school revenue, even though the district provided the charter school special education services. The study counted all revenue for our swim pool as district revenue, even though the pool is open for community use, including charter school students. The study counted kindergarten students as full students when calculating revenue per student, even though kindergarten students were only half funded by the state. Since a K-6 charter school has a higher percentage of kindergarten students than a K-12 school district, the resulting outcome is that the report shows less funding per charter school student. Thank you for considering these concerns.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and committee members. For your record, Lori Wimmer, representing 42,000 members of the Oregon Education Association. And we, too, are here to express concerns about Senate Bill 819. OEA does not position against charter schools. That's not our objection. But as you've heard from the previous two witnesses, there are serious technical problems with this bill. I serve as vice chair of a charter school myself, ORVED, virtual board. And so we are just concerned about the mixing of apples and oranges here. We were here in 1999 when we created the charter school law, which negotiated a careful balance between the traditionally funded public education system and this new innovation. And what we want to do is point out to you that there are lots of things the charter schools don't have to do that traditional public schools do have to do, which was part of the rationale for a different funding percentage on a per student basis. They simply don't have all of the same costs that are mandated for the traditional program. So with that, we would be happy to converse further about ways to amend it, but we sure hope that you don't pass it out as written. Thank you.
Okay. Any questions? Thank you all. Thanks for being here. So Victor DePablos, Brett Duvall, and Matthew Ho. And after this meeting comes the Rules Committee, uses this room. So at about, I think we can push it to 3:50, 2:50, sorry about that, 2:50. We'll have to close and we'll figure out what we're going to do with people that didn't get called. So,
okay. Thank you for giving me this opportunity. Good afternoon. And my name is Victor DePablos. I'm here to talk about Hope Chinese Charter School. you already heard everything, both sides. Everything that I was going to say, it's already been said. So the only thing that I would like to ask is a few hours of your time to visit our schools, to check what is going on, to see the kids performing every day. They do amazing things. They are learning. They are not only math, English, Chinese, but to be kind, to be safe, to be responsible, to care for members of their community. I'm sure if you have the opportunity to go to the schools to see how the kids love their school, how they perform, you will be inspired to support them. It's incredible what children can do if we can give them the opportunity to learn. So please support the bill. If it needs changes, go ahead and do it, but help us to move it ahead and find a solution for all our kids. Thank you.
Thank you.
Chair Roblin and members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to share my testimony. I'm going to follow Senator Cruz's precedent and go off course just for a second to talk about sports. I actually graduated from St. Louis High School in Hawaii, like Marcus Mariota. And as I was sitting here, I'm wondering, why am I here today defending the public school system? My parents thought education was such a priority. They knew how much it would impact my future that they spent $5,000 a year back 20 years ago, which is a lot more now, to send me to a private school. And it was an environment that was just loving, caring, thinking of other people. And there's people like Marcus Mariota coming out of these environments. And now we can see these kinds of environments in our public school systems here in Oregon. And that's what I'm here for, to fight to create that kind of environment where the state of Oregon is building up students that are going out into the real world, that are contributing, caring, kind citizens, that are gaining skills to improve this world that we live in. So you have my testimony. I'm not going to bore you with anything. Everyone else communicated much better than I ever could. So I'm going to leave it to what they said as far as supporting Bill SB 819.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. And I'm open for questions.
Okay. Well, go ahead.
Good afternoon. I will go off course a little bit as well.
And your name?
Pardon. My name is Brett Duval. My youngest daughter will be starting kindergarten at Hope Chinese Charter School this coming fall. I would rehash mostly what people have already said. I definitely support the bill at this point, and I can't speak to anything outside of my own experience, but inside of the charter we operate, some of the supports I just heard said that the school district is offering, we simply do not have access to. I'm an IT professional in my work, and I perform that function at the school, and there is absolutely no technology help available for us. We have to fund all of that out of our own money, out of our own time and effort. We receive very little support outside of that stuff. The highlights I hear is, as a business, our school has to run its entire own operations, human resources management, IT, facilities and services that other schools simply don't have to fund, and it cuts into the model. Thank you.
Thank you.
Since I graduated from the same high school as Marcus Mariota, can I take 30 more seconds, please?
Okay.
So I think all people supporting this bill today, I think the big picture for you to see and hear is that we are here contributing to the public school system. We're not here begging for more money, more funds. We're here to say that whatever you give us, you're going to get your return. You're going to see it in our first graduating class from high school. We are going to go through K through 8, but they're going to be graduating in 9 years. They're going to be bilingual, and they're going to be representing everyone sitting on these chairs right now. So I just want you to know that we're here to make our state look good and just contribute to the nation, contribute to the world. And we're not here to be asking for handouts. We're here to partner with you guys. So thank you.
Thank you.
Mahalo.
Beth Hudson, Leah Mays, and Darla Mimusen, I guess. I hope I got that right. And yes, we should have it now. We'll wait and see. We may not have any more time after this one. So I appreciate everybody that's been here. Yes.
Hi, my name is Beth Hudson. I am a parent at Mitch Charter School in the Tigard-Tualatin School District. And for the last 3 years, I have also been their parent group leader, which is the equivalent of the PTA president. And so I just wanted to mention to you today one thing that has not really been talked about so far, but has been near and dear to and exhausting to my heart over the last 3 years, and that is fundraising. It is a reality of our world that schools are going to have to fundraise to get what they want or what they need. But I'm here to tell you that at my school, we fundraise to meet our budget. That's where I start every year, at a budget deficit, that I fundraise, that I support our school and work to fundraise so we can meet our budget. And I am asking you to support Senate Bill 819 and Senate Bill 820 so that our PTA can fundraise to build our children a play structure, to give our children a library, to buy our children new computers instead of meeting our budget. Thank you.
Well said. Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Leah Mays, and I'm a parent for a child at Trillium Charter School. Thank you so much for the opportunity to speak with you today. As everyone who is supporting 819 and 820 have spoken so eloquently, all of those points I would reiterate wholeheartedly, incredibly, with the fundraising as well. I will just be able to speak about my child's personal experience and the difference that it's made. She started at Trillium Charter School in first and second grade, and then we moved out and she went into a more standard public school for third and fourth grade, and had some incredible challenges. Just personally, she developed high anxiety. She could not quite fit in with their methods of learning and teaching. She's a very artistic, very creative, brilliant child. And when we made the change to go back to Trillium Charter School, thankfully we were accepted in through the lottery. It's just been a night and day difference. She's just thriving. She's socially thriving. Before she would break down in tears just having to go to school, she struggled so much. And just being in the environment where she's so supported in her own personal voice, and how she's able to learn things, and how she's able to then present those things that she's learning, like I said, has been night and day, ladies and gentlemen. I just wholeheartedly advocate for the passing of SB 19 and 20, please, for our children. Thank you.
Thank you. Hi, I'm Darla Musin. I'm a director of a public charter school here in Oregon. And you just heard a lot of data, and it was referred to as apples and oranges. But I want to tell you, you're being sold fruit salad. Because in our district, the ORS does not require a school district to do any of the things in which they said. We do our own infinite visions, our own accounts payable, our own payroll, our own audit, our own taxes, our own human resources, our own technology, our own subfinder, our own background checks, our own truancy, our own PACE insurance, our own lease, our own internet, our own busing, our own mealtime, our own alert systems, our utilities, our maintenance. We lease the building. For God's sake, we pay to use the auditorium within our district that our taxpayers have paid for. That comes to a cost of $195,000. That's on top of the $345,000 that we give to the district. We are a revenue line item. Our kids have become a cash cow for school districts. And I would ask that you do some research and find out so that you don't end up with fruit salad. Please support 819. Come out and ask people, ask questions. The only thing required by law is a site visit. A site visit. Read it. 383 or 338 ORS.
Thank you very much. So we've come to the end of our time for the day. And that was a good way to end. And there are a group of people who did not get to speak. We will keep the list if we open another public hearing at a later date with this one. If you are here, we'll put you on it first. I think we'll wait for right now. And then as we look at some of the amendments we're going to make and do different things, and I will talk with some people about the bill, if there are amendments, we'll get that worked out before we have our next hearing. But with that, I need to close a bunch of hearings. So I'm going to close the public hearing on, or the, yeah, the public hearing, three actually, on Senate Bill 519, Senate Bill 819, sorry about that, 820, and 730. Is that the one? Yes. And Senate Bill 730. And again, I would like to thank all the people who took the time to come here today. This is your legislature. It is important for us to hear from people. And in particular, those students that had to give up difficult subjects they wanted to be at their own schools. I just want to make sure that they recognize how much we care about that. So with that, we're going to end our Senate hearing. Thank you.
We fundraise for a math teacher.